Hello, I'm Leslie Brickus, and you're listening to Rob Morrison on 96.5 Inner FM.
That was Fill the World with Love, sung by the cast of the 1982 Chichester Festival Theatre production of Goodbye Mr. Chips, featuring the music and lyrics of Leslie Brickus. And a gentleman who can personally vouch for the many and varied ways that Leslie Brickus filled the world with love is my special guest, the multi-Grammy and Tony-nominated internationally renowned composer Frank Wildhorn, who now joins me online via Skype from his home in Hawaii. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Rob. Always good to hear from you. Always good to see you.
And good to speak to you, too. Well, a rather melancholy time, paying tribute to a gentleman who we all thought would live on to achieve his century, to quote a cricketing term. But I suppose one consolation is that Leslie, of course, believed that life goes on, so somewhere in heaven or nirvana he's reunited with all the friends that have gone on before.
Yeah, you know, first of all, Leslie would not want us to grieve too long. He would want us to celebrate because that's the way he lived his life. And those of us who know him so closely and know how he lived his life, boy, did he live a life. I mean, you know, he lived many lifetimes in one. And, you know, he taught me so much about writing, but he taught me way more about living. And I miss him every day, but of course I'm celebrating him every day and pay tribute to him every day. And I'm going to do actually my first London Frank and Friends in January. And of course, so much of the show will be a tribute to Leslie.
Mm-hmm, indeed. Well, I grew up in the 1960s, so my first picture-going memories were being taken along to see, well, in order, Mary Poppins, The Sound of Music, and not long after, Doctor Dolittle and Scrooge. So I sort of grew up with the world of pure imagination of Leslie Brickus. How did you first encounter Leslie's work?
Well, first of all, it's interesting to hear you say that because one of the great iconic pictures, of many iconic pictures I have with Leslie, is one that was taken at the opening night of Jekyll and Hyde in Los Angeles when it was on tour a few years ago. And the picture is me, Leslie, and Richard Sherman. Mm-hmm. So you've got Dr. Doodle, Mary Poppins, Winnie the Pooh, It's a Small World After All, and everything else in that one picture. And Richard loved Leslie and loved Jekyll, and then he came to support us when it was in L.A.
Mm-hmm. And an overlooked achievement of Leslie, and I asked Leslie himself about this, is that he was the very first person to have not only written the complete screenplay, but also the complete music and lyrics for not one, but two major movie musicals. And I think that record still stands. I can't think of anyone else who's had a similar achievement in the intervening, almost 60 years.
I don't think anyone has, and it's among a lot of achievements that Leslie had. You know, one of the ones that is the most amazing to me that in the history of stuff is he won a Grammy for Best Song of the Year from a song from a show.
Mm-hmm.
And do you realize, I don't know if that's ever been done. He won a Grammy for Song of the Year from something that was on a show. It wasn't till later where it was, you know, the Sammy Davis record and stuff like that. We're talking about What Kind of Fool Am I?
Yes.
But that was from a show. And to have a Grammy for Best Song of the Year against all the pop songs that come out from a show is quite extraordinary. And, you know, that blows me away, that one.
Indeed, yes, and it's quite ironic too, as Leslie told it, that it was rather just an afterthought, because it was a recording session for a Lieber and Stoller song that everyone would thought would hit the charts, and just as an afterthought, well, they said, oh, why not Anthony Newley record his latest song from the show? So I think they did it in one take, and the Lieber and Stoller song was ignored, and What Kind of Fool Am I went on to win the Grammy.
Well, deservedly so, and I'm good friends with a lot of very, very successful songwriters. And one of the things we always talk about is, you know, a lot of the people I know have had a lot of hits, but no one's had more standards than Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie has had, you know, I don't know, I can't even name or the number of them, but he's had so many standards. I paid tribute to Leslie in Playbill a couple of weeks ago, and I got well over 1,000 responses to my tribute to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. Somebody who I don't know who it is, you know, wrote to me that Leslie is the songwriter that we don't know, but we do know. You know,
yes.
Leslie's songs have been in our lives for so many generations, and we know those songs.
Mm.
And we might not know who wrote them, which is, you know, of course, comes with the baggage of being a writer. But Leslie's been in all of our lives for so many years. And just pick a generation and you can pick a Leslie song that represents that generation. I think that's one of the most enduring and most wonderful things and tributes to his own catalog and his legacy that he's contributed.
Yes, indeed. And it wasn't until I read his autobiography that I discovered that he actually co-wrote My Old Man's a Dustman under a pseudonym with Lonnie Donegan.
Yes, yes, yes. But, you know, you go back to the early James Bond themes, Goldfinger and You Only Live Twice. And then you go, you know, through the Dr. Doodles and the Willy Wonkas and the Victor Victorias and, of course, all the standards that came from his shows. And then you go all the way up through, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, which was his longest running Broadway show. And certainly, you know, it's the gift that keeps giving. It's everywhere all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, you know, back from 62, 63, you know, to today, to be a relevant songwriter, you know, always putting out stuff and new stuff. And every time you do, you know, the bulk of it hits the mark and leaves a mark on the generations that hear it is just remarkable. It's really remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And, well, Leslie told me how he first encountered your work. Perhaps you would like to relate the story from your perspective, how Leslie first got in touch with you.
Well, my recollection is there was a crazy manager who has passed away named Hilly Elkins. And Hilly, remember there was a show in America called Star Search.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my ex-wife, Linda Etter, won that show. And then Hilly produced a show called You Write the Songs. And I was on that show. And that's how I met Hilly. Ben Vereen was the host of that show. I won that show.
Mm-hmm.
I became friends with Hilly. I told him about Jekyll and Hyde that I had done at USC. He had heard some of my pop stuff in the 80s that was happening. And it was 1987, 88. And he said, I want you to meet Leslie Bricus. And I went over to Leslie's home in Beverly Hills, which is unbelievable, like all his other homes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our first meeting. And I don't know if he related this to you, but what I remember about that meeting was he didn't realize that I was such a fan and a student of his work. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I could sit at the piano and play the Joker and play Once in a Lifetime and Who Can I Turn To and What Kind of Fool Am I? And I don't, you know, so many of his songs. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't believe, you know, some pipsqueak from the college, who was in the pop business, knew the richness of his catalog and did it. But, you know, I was a jazz musician, and of course I played a lot of standards over the years. And I just happened to be a huge fan of his before I met him. And I guess that rubbed him the right way.
Yes.
And then we proceeded to, it was 1988, proceeded to start writing, you know, Jekyll. And I'll never forget, you know, Leslie has the most amazing penmanship. Mm-hmm. And he writes in longhand, and whether he's sending you a first or a third draft, you don't know, because it just says where he was, where he wrote it, what time it was when he wrote it. Yes. He was on Khashoggi's yacht in the Mediterranean using his fax machine. Mm-hmm. And he sent me, like, in the same day or 2 days, but I'm going to romanticize it and say in a day, he sent me, like, this is the moment, Once upon a dream. Someone like you. And in those days, you know, we were using cassettes. So I would send him cassettes.
Yes.
And he would be in his, you know, life, which is wherever he was, you know, all over the world. Mm-hmm. And he would send me back faxes. And I will never forget. He said, Frank, at the end of this particular cassette, there was a few minutes left. You didn't know what to do. So you played a song that you didn't finish, but I love very, very much. So I wrote a lyric to it. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what he was talking about. And that song was A New Life, which is one of my favorites, if not the favorite song of Leslie and mine.
Mm-hmm. And how much of the original score of Jekyll that you'd written, was at college or university, was reused in the production that you wrote with Leslie?
I think three or four things from the original USC production made it through to the first version of Jekyll and Hyde. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been so many since, and they're so different around the world. But I would guess there's still probably two to four in there. And then, you know, Leslie and I had like these spurts. Like we had the spurt in 88, 89. That really was the foundation of the score and the songs that people know. But then when it went back out on tour in the mid-90s, we wrote Dangerous Games and In His Eyes, you know, which became one of the bigger hits from the show. Mm-hmm. And we did that later on. So we were always fiddling, you know. The thing about Leslie that I love so much, and that I am the same, we're songwriters. We're much more songwriters than we are men of the theater. Mm-hmm. And we're writing for the theater because we love writing for the theater, because you could write 25 or 30 songs per show and have it sung by all these wonderful voices and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But we're songwriters, which means you wake up in the morning, you have an idea, you get inspired, you write the song, you know, and then let's see if it works for the show. And, you know, Jekyll was constantly doing that because of all the pre-cast albums, because of all the pre-Broadway tours. There was always like a chance to write something else, and we loved doing that. And we did that with a lot of joy.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the upcoming film version of Jekyll and Hyde, did Leslie get around to providing any new lyrics to songs that you had contemplating putting into the screen version?
Yeah, before Leslie got ill, we were going back and forth. He was in the south of France. I was here. I was in New York and then Hawaii and stuff. And we had fiddled with a bunch of stuff. And so when the time is right, the world will hear that. And, of course, it's the last stuff that we did together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I sort of ironically joked to Leslie it was an opportunity to win his third Academy Award, but I guess we'll wait and see.
He's going to win it.
Ah, right. Indeed,
that's
yes.
I'm
sure he will, because he spoke about the declining standards in original songs written for movies over the many years that he'd been on the voting committee for the Academy. So,
yes, he would bemoan that very much to me as well.
Yes. And then, of course, Leslie got you involved in his personal project, one that was long in the gestation, even going back to the years when he was a schoolboy, and that, of course, is Cyrano de Bergerac.
Which is, you know, a brilliant piece of work by Leslie, because, first of all, what he did was, when we did it, he spent a summer in France, and he got a scholar, some French scholar, that helped him, because Leslie does speak French, mm-hmm. and he did his own translation, you know, from the original.
Yes.
So Leslie's was an original translation, and of course, Cyrano, you know, just happened to be both of our favorite play. A girlfriend gave him the play in 1956, mm-hmm. and signed the play with a, "You're going to make a musical of this one day." So it was a huge passion of his all his life. I mean, he got it before I was born. So
yes,
and we had a wonderful, wonderful time writing Cyrano. Of course, the play is so beautiful, and there's so many hooks of songs in the play. So, you know, when the guy stands there and says, you know, "Tonight I can fight 100 men, bring me giants." Mm-hmm. Well, if you've ever not heard a cue for a song, you know what I mean? That's as obvious. But the play has so many of those moments in it. And Leslie did just a remarkable and beautiful and graceful and elegant job with those lyrics.
Indeed, and I suppose the irony is that while the world at large has yet to hear them in English, because it's been a great success in the Asian countries, and of course translated into their native language.
Yeah, the problem is that Cyrano gets done so much in English in New York and London, mm-hmm. and so it's very hard to convince producers that there's room for another one. But just given what's going on with me right now, you know, I'm obviously waving that flag all the time. We'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And, of course, you got to meet the wonderful Julie Andrews yourself during Victor Victoria, and you've told that story before, but Leslie also got you involved to write additional songs for the stage version of that, since Henry Mancini was either in his last illness or had he passed on by that time?
Well, when I met Henry, he was well. Mm-hmm. And then he took ill while they were working on the show. And he was so kind to me and so supportive of me. You know, his wife died last week. Mm-hmm. Jeannie Mancini passed away last week. And that's important because Jeannie was the one who had to sign off that I would be the one to, you know, write new songs for Victor Victoria. And given that I had never been on Broadway yet when I did Victor Victoria, that took a lot, you know,
yes.
For them to do that for me. And then the stories of, you know, listen, you go hang out with Julie Andrews and Blake Edwards, all those people, you know, mm-hmm. I used to say to Leslie, "I want to hide under the piano. Like, what am I doing in this room?" Uh-huh. I used to say, I'm very clear. They had a beautiful brownstone in New York on the Upper East Side. And, you know, sometimes when they were, you know, in colorful arguments about the show and doing stuff like that, I would say, "Leslie, what am I doing here? What am I doing here?" You know? They could have had Cy Coleman or Charlie Strauss or a lot of people, but they had heard, Julie had heard Linda Eder's first album, and she heard the Jekyll and Hyde concept record. And of course, Leslie was waving my flag at the time. And so she said, "Let's get that kid." And I tell you, just, you know, that's like yesterday. I could see so clearly, you know, the upright piano that I was at and how beautifully the brownstone was furnished. And the funny thing about those days were, with that group of people, so it's Leslie, Blake Edwards, Rob Marshall, Tony Adams, Julie, and of course all of their assistants are always there. Mm-hmm. No matter what you were doing, good, bad, indifferent, arguing, celebrating, whatever, when that dinner bell rang at 6 o'clock, you went upstairs and it was all about the wine and the champagne and the good life. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They worked, but they also enjoyed the good life.
Indeed.
And I was just saying, you know, my very first thing I wrote for my professional theater career was the 11 o'clock song of Living in the Shadows for Julie. And she was very kind to me and very kind talking about it in the press and over the years and stuff. And wow, what an experience, right?
Indeed.
Come on.
Yes, to see that screen icon in the flesh and have the privilege of working with her.
And she was bawdy. I mean, she could curse like a sailor. And, you know, she is a sexy lady. And I just loved, she was a great hang. She really was.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Edwards was crazy. He was like bipolar all the way. Uh-huh. But she was a wonderful hang.
Indeed. And to quote another song lyric, it's not where you start, it's where you finish. Of course, Leslie himself, reading his autobiography, was just this normal middle-class kid from London who fell in love with the MGM musicals, and then he initially thought he was going to be a journalist, but then when he did National Service, he started writing songs just to relieve the boredom, and his career took off from there.
Yeah, I think his dad was a journalist, right?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think so, I'm pretty sure. And you know, he got involved, you know, at Cambridge with the Footlights, and that's where he met Bee Lilly.
Indeed, yes, who was a great influence. His theatrical fairy godmother, as he called her.
Yes, 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 yes. He always would tell me a story. Let's see, where were they? I think they were in France, and they were on a balcony, and they were looking below. There was a bungalow, and Bee Lilly said to Leslie that Alan J. Lerner and Fritz Lowe were in that bungalow working on turning Pygmalion into a musical. What a horrible idea. That's an absolute, you know, true story Leslie would share with me more than once.
Indeed, and he got to meet, well, not only Lerner and Lowe, but also Cole Porter, courtesy of Bee Lilly, and Noel Coward, and all her other associates and cronies.
All of them. And, you know, Leslie has one of the most amazing book collections, autograph collections, and I think his autograph book collection started with the lyrics of Cole Porter, who gave it to Leslie. He gave him his book in a hospital in New York.
Indeed, yes. And a great fan of those writers' works, of course, going back, as I said, to watching the MGM movie musicals in wartime London. He said, you know, there'd be restrictions and blackouts on going to the theatre, but you always sneak through to get to the cinema to see the latest MGM musical.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, all of that stuff was a huge influence on him. You know, it's interesting because, you know, my kind of two mentors were Leslie and Don Black. And Don Black, you know, was a comic, mm-hmm. Don Blackstone. And he used to say, you know, comedy runs through my blood. I wish it ran through my act. But that, you know, that was just, I'm so lucky to have had those two guys, you know, in my life. And you know, of course, Don and I are still working together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Leslie didn't play an instrument.
Not right? Even the piano.
Okay. He did not play the piano.
Oh, okay.
And him and Anthony Newley would hum songs to each other. And sometimes play it like on one of those things like you blow in and it has some keys and stuff. And there's an unsung hero in the Leslie story, and that's a man named Ian Frazier.
Oh, yes.
He's passed away, and Ian was kind of a third member of the Newley Brickus team because neither of them played an instrument. So Ian was the one who harmonized their melodies and their lyrics and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think Ian doesn't get enough credit, especially, you know, the songs that Leslie and Newley wrote. When Leslie wrote with, you know, Mancini and Lilo Schifrin and John Williams and with me, you know, he had a piano player next to him and stuff.
Yes.
But
yes.
If you imagine how rich and beautiful the songs with Newley he wrote, then you really can imagine the contribution that Ian Frazier made. You know, Ian made an enormous contribution to that collaboration. I know one story that Leslie would love to tell me, and I might get the titles right, but it doesn't matter. It's the impact of the story is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Anthony Newley was married to Joan Collins for a while, and they were in Beverly Hills, and they were doing some renovation to the home in Beverly Hills, and Evie, Leslie's gorgeous wife, and Joan Collins, who were schoolmates and best friends, were throwing some kind of party in the house for a bunch of women. And so Newley and Leslie went to the bathroom, literally in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And one sat on the toilet and the other sat in the bath.
Oh, yes.
And that day they wrote Once in a Lifetime and Who Can I Turn To? And they're on either side of one piece of paper. So they're sitting in the bathroom. The girls are there. And they wrote $50 million worth of songs, you know, in the bathroom. He loved that story. And that's amazing. Come on. I mean, you know,
indeed.
Priceless stuff. But we had our own stories. You know, we wrote all over the place. You know, Leslie lived in Acapulco, in Las Brisas, Acapulco.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy named Deportanova, Baron Deportanova. He wasn't a baron. He bought the baronship. He was a billionaire. He bought it.
Yes.
And they lived in a house. Oh, my God. What's the name of the house? The house has a name. Arabesque. The house is called Arabesque. And you never forget this house, not just because it's ridiculously large and there's giant stuffed animals all over the house and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it had an elevator that went from the house to the beach. And it's a house that was used by the bad guy in one of the James Bond movies.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, this guy had a disco in the house with a disco ball and a piano in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, Leslie and him were drinking, and I had an idea. I said, "Is there a piano in here?" And the servant led me to this crazy, you know, like Studio 54 disco place where God knows what happened in there every night.
Uh-huh.
And there was a piano in the corner, totally out of tune with cigarette burns in the keys and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote Dangerous Game, the music, The Dangerous Game from Jekyll, on that piano at this place called Arabesque.
Oh, extraordinary.
Yeah. You know, I've got a lot of those. Another story Leslie would love everybody to know, and he tells, is when him and John Williams, they wrote Can You Read My Mind from Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this story?
Who was it? Maureen McGovern, who did the initial recording, which they thought was going to be a complete winner.
Recording. And they said, oh my God, we're going to win another, you know, Oscar for this. They knew they had a hit song. They were having recordings. And they went to the screening of the movie, and they're both sitting a couple seats away from each other. And then they hear the intro of the music, and Superman is flying with Margot Kidder.
Mm-hmm.
And Margot Kidder starts speaking the lyric.
Yes.
And can you read my mind? Do you know what it is to come from another place? And she's just literally speaking a few lines of the lyric as opposed to them using the song. And they just looked at each other like, shall we kill ourselves now?
Yes, even though it got an Academy Award nomination, the song from Hook, he wasn't particularly impressed with the way that the young girl sang it. When you're alone.
He wanted to throw the little girl off the boat. But you know what's so funny? Again, there's a whole generational thing. You know, Leslie wrote the songs from Home Alone. Who knows that?
Mm.
Nobody knows that. He wrote Somewhere in My Memory with John Williams. Somewhere in my memory. Everybody knows that, but Leslie wrote that, you know, with John Williams. And then I guess Spielberg had heard that and asked them to write the songs to Hook.
Yes, yes. Leslie was very proud of the fact that it was acknowledged that Goodbye, Mr. Chips was the first movie on which John Williams sort of developed his musical style in arranging, Leslie's music for the film. The John Williams orchestration style, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yes, yes, you're right. And, you know, John Williams and I are the only kind of two collaborators really left. You know, Leslie lived to 90, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Ian, and I have a wonderful, one of the great pictures I have in my life. I wish I could show it to you right now, is me, Henry Mancini, Ian Frazier, Anthony Newley, and Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone but me in that picture is now gone, you know. And it's a beautiful picture, and I treasure it, and it's sad as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was Leslie's youngest collaborator by probably 30 years, so I guess I should still be around. So
yes, yes, indeed. And in the past, you've said that you've dabbled with lyric writing, particularly for pop songs. Have you turned back to that discipline for some of your musical theatre works?
Yeah, there's a show called Reunion that's about a fictitious folk rock band from Laurel Canyon in the 70s that I'm writing right now. And Sir Peter Asher, who is the father of that music, is the musical supervisor, and he's going to produce the records of that. And I've been writing lyrics for that and loving that. But it's in a pop vocabulary and takes me back to my roots, you know, as a songwriter, and I'm loving that very much. But you know, don't forget, Leslie was my first collaboration, my very first professional collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no question at all that if it wasn't as fun and as joyful, if it didn't have that kind of romanticism about it and, you know, let's write these songs and, you know, be true to who you are, Frank, don't worry, just write who you are and all of that. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have that experience with Leslie, I would have never had a theater career, because at that time, in the late 80s, I was in the club. I was in the pop club there. My songs were being recorded. I was making a wonderful living. I felt very lucky. I was living in the studios with great artists recording my songs.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my friends were like, why are you doing this theater stuff anyway? You're not going to make any money. It's going to break your heart. They're so mean. And why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was because the experience of doing it with Leslie and then putting it on the first time was just such a wonderful experience that was like, oh, okay, I can do this. Let's do some more of this.
And candidly speaking, do you know whether you've made more money from your musical theater works than you have from your pop works?
You know, that's a great question. I probably have made more from the grand rights, from the actual selling of tickets to my shows. You know, I have like 40 shows now, and Jekyll and Hyde alone has had over 4,000 productions. So, I mean, you know, we're doing okay. But the small rights, you know, the publishing and the royalties from the songs, if you add up, you know, the Where Do Broken Hearts Go, which has sold 50 million records, just that one song,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of Whitney, and some of my big ones that, of course, like with Leslie, This Is the Moment, which I think has now been recorded well over 1,500 times, you know, different versions of stuff.
Yes.
I mean, I don't, you know, it might be pretty close to each other, but I think the theater stuff has probably overtaken it in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And do you have divided loves, or do you have equal time for both genres of music, so to speak?
I love them all, Rob. I mean, that's what makes it fun, is the variety, is the fact that I can go from Julie Andrews to Molly Hatchet. You don't even know who Molly Hatchet is.
No.
They're a Southern rock and roll group. You don't really want to hang out with them. But the point is that I prided myself to be that eclectic, and that's as eclectic as you can possibly be. And then more than anything, maybe you know this, maybe you don't. The Vienna Symphonic has just recorded my first symphony. I'm the first American to have a debut symphony ever recorded with this world-class orchestra. And the CD will be out this Christmas, and the premiere, the live premiere, will be next fall in Vienna. And so, you know, we've gone from pop to theater, and now we're in symphonic classical music. And, you know, it's what makes it rich and fun, and they're all big mountains to climb in completely different ways. But it's still about piano, sitting at a piano at night and writing melody, as far as I'm concerned.
Indeed, yes. Well, I suppose almost on par with George Gershwin, if I can say that. Of course, his great love was musical theatre, but then he composed his great orchestral works, and many of his theatre songs went into the popular realm as well. So following in George's footsteps, is there an opera in the offing, do you think, in the
yes,
future?
Yes, there is.
Ah, there is.
The talks are going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
I know who I'm going to write it with. I can't give that away, but I can give you all the symphony stuff away, because that's a life-changing thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
It has already changed my life. It's changed my life as a musician, because writing the symphony in it's a romantic symphony. It's Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky, Stravinsky, Shostakovich, Prokofiev. Those are my influences on this piece. It's called the Danube, by the way. It's a historical and geographic up and down the river of the history of the Danube. Because my hands had to go places they've never gone before at the piano, it's made me a better composer, you know, made me a student, and it's affecting my writing in a positive way. And so it's changed my life that way. And then when this thing comes out, it's going to change my life in another way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some snobs in New York who still call me the pop guy, and that's okay. You know, that's fine. It served me well. You know, when Leslie got criticism, he would always just buy another Chagall. That's what he used to say.
Yes.
You know, just buy another horse, buy another Chagall. Again. Remember how good music has been to you. That's a great lesson he taught me. Absolutely, that's a Leslie lesson.
You do.
He would say, be a duck. Just go, let it go off of you and stuff like that. But anyway, when the symphony comes out, it'll be quite interesting to see what some of those people have to say.
Indeed.
Because the Vienna Symphonic, it's 97 pieces, and the best classical musicians in the world, and they're pretty snobby, if you know what I mean, musically. And not just their playing, but the quotes and the things they've had to say about it. They're life-changing to me. They really are.
Yes, indeed. And I guess if Leslie was still around and heard the symphony, he'd want to set lyrics to it, as he did with the orchestral works of George.
He heard a few excerpts from it, and he said, well, let's think about this.
Have you had the privilege?
He always calls me Franklin. And to Leslie, I'm Franklin. He's Brickman, and I'm Franklin.
Okay.
So, yeah. We miss him, but we're going to have him forever because his songs they ain't going anywhere.
Indeed, yes. Have you had the privilege of hearing a few words with George? He said they were looking forward to staging it in spring in the UK.
You know, years ago, he showed me, it wasn't Rhapsody in Blue, it was, what's the other one? Oh. Was it the American Paris theme? Mm-hmm. Bum, 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 bum. That's Paris, right?
Yes.
He had sent some lyrics to that beautifully, and he was hoping that was going to happen. I think he also sent lyrics to Nutcracker, if I'm not wrong.
That's right, yes. There's an animated picture, which is apparently in the works, as is an animated remake of Scrooge.
Yes, no, I know that was going. You know, when Leslie passed away, it wasn't like he was retired.
No.
he was working on the Sammy Davis musical that I hope will open, you know, in London. In the next couple of years, I hope they'll. I'm not involved in that. I don't know who's producing it, but I hope they keep it going.
Yes. I had the privilege, well, the great pleasure too, of speaking with him last July to mark the 60th anniversary of Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. And he gave a roundup of all the projects that are currently on the boil. And we look forward to seeing them hit the stage in the concert hall. And unfortunately, he's not around in this realm, at least, to watch them. But I'm sure he'll be watching on from another realm.
He's watching and he's looking after me. My relationship with him was more almost son number two and family, you know, before professional. And, I'm so lucky. You know, I got to celebrate many of his birthdays with him. And, every year for the past 20, you know, I would spend time with him in the south of France at the end of the summer. We had kind of an unwritten law, Leslie and I, which is on Jekyll and Hyde, you know, I do the work. I'm out there getting it produced and, you know, doing the best to keep it going. And he knows that. And he would trust me to do that. And then, you know, I would get time at his unbelievable house in the south of France every summer to kind of rejuvenate and recharge the batteries. And it was something we did forever. And it was the best. Great memories and all of that kind of stuff.
Indeed. Well, as a further legacy to Leslie, would you like to nominate your favourite Wildhorn Brickus songs or even just your favourite Brickus songs for me to play to finish off tonight's programme?
Well, you know, What Kind of Fool Am I is an unbelievable song. You know, Tony Bennett's version of Who Can I Turn To is wonderful. There's great versions of so many of Leslie's songs, as you know. Mm-hmm. A New Life, you know, Linda's version of A New Life, of course, is the classic. You know, Liza Minnelli's version of New Life that she did at Radio City Music Hall, which is on YouTube, and you can get that. That's also fantastic. And, you know, I have to say to you, one of the very last things Leslie said to me a couple of days before he passed, Evie put the phone by his ear, and he said, Franklin, this is the moment. Keep it going. You know, he did. He like charged me with keeping it going. And so I have to, you know, work a little bit here, not to shed a tear, mm-hmm. as I have shed many for Leslie lately. But one of the very last things he said to me was, you know, this is the moment. Keep it going.
Mm-hmm. So. Great. And any other songs that you would like to nominate?
A New Life. Uh-huh. I love A New Life. I love the lyrics to A New Life. I think they say so much. I love the lyrics he did to Bring Me Giants from Cyrano. And I love the lyrics that our very first song, which is Living in the Shadows, the Julie Andrews song. is a beautiful lyric, and I think it's a beautiful marriage of music and lyric. And I remember working on that song with Leslie, and he would say, you know, do this here or try that there. And I was so new to it all, you know, so wide-eyed. And I just remember those times, and that's a very special song. Linda has a great version of that song, too, of Living in the Shadows.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Frank Wildhorn, for coming online from your home in Hawaii to pay tribute to the sadly late Leslie Bricus, whose musical legacy shall live on, no doubt into the 22nd century and long after all of us have gone too. And every success with your future projects too, especially the upcoming film version of Jekyll and Hyde, your last collaboration with Leslie Bricus.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you. It's great to be here, as always.
Indeed. And I look forward to chatting with you again in the future. Thank you very much, and all the very best there in Hawaii, and have a great day.
All right, sir. Take care.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye.